Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days, and good days as well.
Feel like the waterfall of thoughts. Every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York Podcast.
And I'm Dave, your host, and I'm glad you're listening to this podcast. This particular talk struck me. This is a talk by Vigen Aharonian. He's been on the podcast before. He is a longtime teacher in the Shambhala Buddhist tradition. And this was a talk he gave about a month ago about, you know, dealing with the current social and political divisions in our society. What do you do? What do you do? How do you approach it? How do you think about it? What could one's attitude be about it, particularly from the point of view of the Shambhala Buddhist teachings on enlightened society, which he reviews? And I like this talk. So let's just get right into it. Visit us at ny.shambhala.org. For all of our upcoming classes, in particular, I want to recommend Shambhala Training Weekend 1, which is happening the weekend of May 5th. Shambhala Training is a series of meditation weekends, and Weekend 1 is the first. It's a great introduction or deepening of one's meditation practice, and there's great teachings and a great sense of community building that happens over the course of the weekend. So ny.shambhala.org. for Shambhala Training Weekend 1, the weekend of May 5th, or any of our other great classes that we have coming up this spring. Okay, Vigen, here we go.
These days, everybody is so much, most people are so much engaged and involved, at least at following the news, getting frustrated, maybe angry, anxious, fearful. There is a fair amount of divisiveness and animosity in the society. And so I thought it would be good to have a discussion on how do we approach all this from the enlightened society, from Shambhala Buddhist point of view. How can we maintain our activeness in what happens in the world while maintaining the some healthy big view on what am I doing and why am I doing and what's going on around me and how do I approach all this? One question there is how do I maintain my sanity, my state of mind? Some people I know get so much engaged that they lose track of what happens in their own life. They are become too addicted to news and anger. Some people have questions, how do I interact with my cousins or colleagues who are on the opposite side? How do I participate in social action, perhaps? I thought all these questions would be good to try at least to address from enlightened society point of view. Couple of disclaimers. First, I want to assume that there are people here from both sides, although, frankly, it happens to be that vast majority of Shambhalians happen to be on New Yorkers in general, but Shambhalians in particular on Democratic side. But that's not really the point. The point is, how do you deal with people who have opposing opinion? I even thought I'll pretend I'm Republican, but that won't work. Another thing which probably is obvious, we're not going to solve any specific problem, any specific executive order here, and I hope we won't get into minute details of specific decisions. And I didn't think of this as a place where we would necessarily ventilate and provide shoulders to cry for each other. We're trying to figure this out. We'll have a tea time when we can use for crying on each other's shoulders. There are two parts to the problem. First one, as I said, how do I maintain my clarity of mind? How do I handle my emotions? How do I deal with myself? And the other part, how do I deal with the external situation, specific people, specific scenarios? So I want to focus more on the second and the first, but we'll start with the first one. Since there are many of you that are new to Shambhala, I want to clarify first two important concepts that we use in Shambhala teachings. The first one is basic goodness. So what do we mean by basic goodness? It's the potentiality of everyone to have fundamental healthy intentions. Everybody has the ability to take care of somebody. There is goodwill at some level in every being. So there is the potentiality of goodness by every individual, in every individual and every situation. It is a potentiality. You might argue with me, why would somebody do this or that? Anger, aggression, and so forth. That happens too. But when we talk about basic goodness, we talk about potentiality of wholesomeness and good intention. Even when we make aggressive actions and yell at somebody or feel jealous and so on and on, still the core of goodness is still there. It's true that out of fear or confusion or ignorance, we don't behave always out of our goodness. But the intention somewhere underneath exists. It exists in everybody. And the reason we don't act always in sync with that goodness, inherent goodness that we're born with, that we possess, is because of various confused views. Ignorance. In Buddhism, there is this term ignorance. Out of confusion, small-mindedness, a sense of us against them, sense of territory. Ego is another good word. Out of this false perception of ego. This is me, this is them, these are my interests are against their interest, they hurt me, I should hurt them. We are not in sync with that goodness that we have, but the potentiality is there. So from Shambhala Buddhist point of view, it's extremely important to keep that in mind, that I am fundamentally good, worthy, whole, wholesome, healthy human being. I do have confusions, I repeat. I do wrong things from time to time, or maybe often. But potentiality to even the fact that I am telling myself that I should not have hurt this other person, that comes from the basic goodness we have, right? So that's quite a foundational point where we come from. But potentiality of goodness is there in myself and everybody around me. The only reason, I'll repeat this last time perhaps, the only reason things are not going so smoothly in society, in my family, in my relationships, because I'm sometimes small-minded, confused, and other people are also egocentric at times. And so two egos heated against each other, things don't go well. But potentiality is there. Now, let's move to the second very important concept, which is in the title of this talk, enlightened society. What do we mean by enlightened society? It's not a society where everybody has the same opinion and votes the same way. It's not a society where everybody is perfect. It's not a society where the weather is always right. It is a society where people have the attitude to use their basic goodness and recognize each other's basic goodness and work with each other. Recognizing that I have my limitations, my confusions, my ignorance, and the other people have their own, and we can work with that. Recognizing that the potentiality, the basic goodness, is there. We can always rely on it, we can always try to bring that up. So enlightened society is a society that works towards enlightenment by recognizing that the differences are negotiable. How does that sound? So in order to engage in with other people, with that sense of sanity and good view, we first want to bring up the good qualities that we possess. If I'm angry, upset, frustrated, if I'm spinning the angry thoughts beyond reason, whatever I do with that won't be really helpful, right? I'm just exaggerating the sense of anger and frustration around me. So the first thing to do is to address our own sanity. Again, in the enlightened society, the best way to impact the society is through own personal example. If I behave as a sane, clear-minded person, that radiates. Everybody can think of somebody around them that feels good to be next to a person who is calm, sane. They have an opinion, they express their opinion, but they don't do it in an aggressive way, so you whether you want it or not, you want to contradict them. It's the opposite. You want to play with them, you want to engage with them. You might disagree, but they don't express their opinion in a way that is that creates animosity, right? So we want to be a person like that, the person that when we speak, when we do things, it comes from a place of wisdom and equanimity, and people are ready to hear us. They might come from an opposite point of view, but we present our point of view in a way that they are ready to hear us. And we are ready to hear them. That might be even more important. First, we need to be ready to hear them. How do we bring ourselves to that state of being that we are workable ourselves, with ourselves and with others? The state of mind we're looking for is the attitude, in other words, the motivation, the attitude we want to cultivate, is we want to have the attitude of loving kindness to ourselves and others. We want everybody to experience love in their life, right? Again, this is a general attitude. No matter if we agree with them or disagree with them, everybody is worthy of some kind to experience in their life some love and kindness, including ourselves, of course, right? So the wish that everybody has this is surrounded by love and kindness. We want to have an attitude when we wish everybody to be free of suffering too. We don't want people to suffer, whether we agree with them or not. We don't really want them to suffer. What do we have to gain out of anybody else's suffering? Right? So we want to create that attitude of wishing everybody be free of suffering. We also want everybody to just enjoy their lives. Right? Why won't everybody enjoy their lives? Yeah, we have difficulties, obstacles, things to deal with, but generally, would be nice if I could, when I interact with people, when I wake up in the morning and go into the streets and I see different people, I have that underlying attitude that I wish everybody had a joy in their life. And the fourth one is a sense of equanimity. This is a big one in our scenario. Equanimity in the sense not dividing into us and them. It's not us against them. It's everybody's happiness is involved. It's very difficult to be happy when everybody or some people around you are suffering or in pain. The real happiness is when everybody more or less happy. So that's the equanimity. It's even beyond that. It's when we stop even assessing that this is my happiness and this is your happiness. It's just happiness that happens. It's not me or you. We are in this field of joy and happiness. If we create happiness, it's a field for everybody. If there is suffering, everybody is impacted. So the sense of equanimity is dropping the boundaries. The four things that I mentioned are called in Buddhism four immeasurable qualities. Loving kindness, freedom from suffering, joy, and equanimity. So we want to cultivate this attitude. If we engage in social activism, in discussion with opponents, with that state of mind, it will be much more workable for ourselves and for the other side. That's how we cultivate society, enlightened society, from that attitude. Yeah, there is another teaching I which would be the core of my talk. But before that, I thought I'll tell you a parable that I really love. A few people here attended my classes before. You might have heard this. this is about... an old man who lives in a village. Let's say it's a Zen story. So let's imagine a Japanese village somewhere in the mountains. And so he has a son, and he has an old horse. They have an old horse, and someday the horse disappears, and the son runs home, tells his father the horse disappeared. Very upset, disappointed, and says, let's go look for the horse. And the father says, okay, let's go look for the horse, but is not particularly upset about it. So they go in the trails around the village. They don't find the horse, and the son keeps running back and forth, very upset and frustrated. That's the most valuable thing they have. And even upset that the father is not upset. So they come back. The father, he asks the father, why are you not frustrated about this? What are we going to do? And the father says, how do I know? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? We looked for the horse. We didn't find the horse. We'll see what happens. A couple of days later, neighbors come in and say, guys, you are so lucky. Your horse is back, and it brought back two wild horses. It's in the meadow nearby. Now you have your horse, plus you have two wild horses with it. You are so lucky. And the father says, I'm grateful. We'll take the horses, but how do I know? Are we lucky or not? So they take the horses, and a couple of days later, again, neighbors run in and say and tell the father, such a terrible thing. Your son was riding this wild horse and fell off the horse and broke his leg. He's there in the field. Such a terrible luck. Father goes and brings back the son and takes care of the leg the best he can. And still says to the neighbors, how do I know? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? And then a few days later, again, news come in that there is a war and military came into the village to gather all the young men to go to war, to the army. And this boy is with broken legs, so he stays home, and neighbors say, you're so lucky your son has a broken leg. And well, this can go on and on, right? That's how life goes. Things keep happening. And in the application to how to maintain the state of mind I talked about, if we don't get entirely lost, drowned in the news we receive, we can maintain some sense of equanimity and clarity of mind and clarity what to do and not to do. There is an important part of this story. The father did go to look for the horse, and father did take care of the broken leg. He did put the effort. Things happen, and they need our attention and energy and time. I want to emphasize here there is a notion of spiritual bypassing. When we use philosophy, or you could use Shambhala teachings to say, or this story, who cares? I don't know this president, that president. I have my things to do. Whatever happens, happens. Right? It's not about that. No, that would be bypassing, using spirituality to bypass life. Not at all. When there are things that you need to be fixed, addressed, you engage. But in order to be effective in our engagement, we want to maintain a healthy attitude. That's my big point today. How to engage with a healthy attitude, to be productive, not to drain our energy unnecessarily, and have a positive effect rather than divisive effect. So the teachings I want to talk about next is how to engage. They are called six paramitas. It's another very important Mahayana teaching on six paramitas. We have a whole course here, a six-week course called Six Paramitas, so I'm going to cover it in 5 minutes. So these are six ways, the six ways to engage. Paramitas actually also have a meaning of crossing to the other side. These are vehicles, boats, through which we cross to the other side from the state of suffering into state of enlightenment. Generosity, patience, discipline, joyful exertion or energy, it's translated both ways, energy or exertion, meditation, is the fifth one, and knowledge or prajna paramita is the sixth one. Generosity. How do we apply the teachings of generosity in social activism? There are many aspects to this. One aspect is to be generous with our time and effort and willingness to spend the time and resources and time for causes that we think are worthy. The other aspect of generosity when we are interacting with other people is to provide them space, be able to hear them, listen to them, being generous in that sense. Give the other side space and provide shoulder to cry. Be accommodating. That's generosity. To make generosity pure, we should not make a big deal out of me. I'm so generous. I'm a really good guy. Not making a big deal of them. They're so confused and painful, and I'm going to help them. And not make a big deal out of the whole action. A big deal that I'm making this really generous act of hearing this moron for 15 minutes. Okay, so no big deal. I'm not a big deal. They are not big deal. The whole situation, no big deal. And generously providing the space. That's how we apply generosity. Patience. Obviously, this is often, if not always, emotional situations. When you engaged, it's emotional. We get engaged because it is emotional, because we get angry, frustrated, and so forth. So patience is dealing with our own emotions and emotions of others as well. But let's start with ourselves. How do we deal with our emotions? The way our emotions rise, we start boiling, is because we tell some story to ourselves. We hear something from outside, some news, and we get frustrated by thinking how stupid this is, how aggressive this is, unfair. Right? We exaggerate ourselves internally. We tell ourselves a story, and we get more. I like the analogy of pouring oil into fire. We have a storyline. It could be mutual. We talk to somebody, and we help each other to get angrier and angrier. Right? So the first step is to let go of the story. There is a fact, a real fact, that we received, and we can develop an opinion about that fact. But we don't need to exaggerate it more than it is, right? Otherwise, we become destructive to ourselves and others and the whole situation. We want to maintain some clarity of mind. It takes patience to let go of the story and come back to our pure initial emotion. There is nothing wrong with the emotion. When we hear news, it might rise emotion. But then we don't want to blow it out of proportion. The emotion has some information in it. If you got angry hearing the news, maybe you need to do something about it. But again, you don't want to overblow it, blow it out of proportion. It takes discipline to keep coming back as we do in meditation, right? What do we do in meditation? Our mind goes into storyline, we come back to reality, to deal with the reality as it is, right? It takes discipline to keep coming back. If you go with a group of people on a march, everybody is fired up, and maybe it's good to, it's invigorating to some extent to chant something together. But then the crowd might start, throwing rocks into the windows, right? Or it happens very easily. When the crowd gets angry, it can go there. It can start turning cars upside down, right? So we want to have a discipline and clarity of mind. When is useful and helpful, and when am I crossing the line and helping, pushing others to cross the line too? Right? Some discipline of coming back to current moment, to reality, to sense of synchronicity of mind and body. The fourth one is energy or joyful exertion. I like joyful exertion better. When we want to throw ourselves and exert ourselves and engage and do things with a sense of joy rather than frustration. Enjoying that. Let me take one step back here. A big view, it helps to have a big view in order not to fall into frustration and get drowned. Nothing is a really big deal. Everything passes sooner or later. It takes an effort of people to change. Again, not to fall into spiritual bypassing. But after all, it's not the end of the world, right? And so if we have that bigger view that right now I'm trying to fix this, but if it doesn't work, it's not the end of the world. So if we have that somewhere in the back of our mind that nothing is a really big deal, then we can engage energetically without losing too much energy on fearing that I will not succeed. We lose energy through fear of failing. That goes with everything we do, actually. A project, work, study, whatever we do. We lose a lot of energy to fear of failing. If we don't have that fear, then we can engage with just joy and enthusiasm. Projects at work, relationships. If we are not afraid that the relationship will fail, we can just be enjoying the relationships while it lasts, with sense of humor and joy and ease. Going back to social activism, again, engaging with sense of joy and enthusiasm rather than fear that I won't succeed. So that's the fourth parameter, joyful exertion. The fifth one is meditation. There is the practicing part on the cushion when we learn to be in that state of equanimity. Learn, teach the mind to be workable. We learn to be present and aware, mindful and aware. And then why do we do this? Because we want to have that state of mind in our daily activities, right? So when we are engaged in a difficult conversation, we want our mind to be fully present and react to what actually happens rather than spin it mentally beyond what actually happens. We want to hear the other person. It takes a relaxed state of mind. All six parameters, by the way, work together. You can't really separate. So if we take an example of difficult conversation, you can apply generosity. I talked about that when I talked about generosity. Give the other person the space to talk. We apply patience. That's obvious. We patiently provide the space. We apply the discipline of staying present and be perceptive. We apply energy, joyful exertion, right? We apply our meditative state of mind, the ability to be fully present. And the sixth parameter is knowledge. Prajna paramita, wisdom. That one is about the clarity of seeing through, seeing what happens behind the scenes, hearing what are the underlying emotions of the other side. I'll give an example here. I'll get into specifics, which might be explosive, but this is just example. I don't bring this in order for you to discuss this specific situation. Some people genuinely are concerned about security of the country and not having terrorists coming in. That's the genuine motivation, right? And so when you hear the other side and feel their pain and their frustration, that why all these liberal Democrats want to open the doors for the terrorists to come in, right? They have a genuine fear. You may disagree with them, and we won't get into details here. I can provide a million details myself. You don't want, need you to do that. But they have a genuine fear, and they have a genuine frustration that all these people are endangering the lives of their children, perhaps. Right? There are, at least there are people who have that point of view. So in order to see through, you need to have, we want to cultivate this clarity of mind and get the points where we can connect and then go from there. Why would this work? Why wouldn't that work? What's healthy? What's not healthy? Right? But we want to be able to see through. And the other person doesn't express it as nicely as I did. They use hard language, which raises animosity, divisiveness. But our ability, if we want to engage in enlightened society style, is to see their emotion and where their fear comes from and let them ventilate, maybe, not engage in the way they hook you into engaging in aggressive way, but let them express themselves and maybe find the common ground and take it from there. That would be having wisdom in our engagement and being able to see through the anger and frustration and confusion, our confusion, their confusion, be able to see through. That's what the six paramita is about in this context. These are much deeper teachings that I'm expressing here. That's why we have a six-week course. But for tonight, I can probably stop there. So basic goodness, in light of society where people recognize basic goodness, to summarize, basic goodness of ourselves, basic goodness of others, basic goodness of a society as a whole, of reality as a whole. There is no fundamental problem. Fundamentally, things are okay and workable. There is confusion, wrong moves, but it's all workable. That's the attitude. We have different opinions. That's okay. That's healthy. Doubt, for example, let me say a couple of things about doubt. Doubt is linked to intelligence, right? When we hear news, we can have initial response. It can be a very healthy response, and we might then say, well, maybe not so bad, maybe it's okay. And so there is it's a thin line. You may, some doubt, some questioning is a sign of intelligence. Asking questions, not jumping into conclusion right away. Sometimes the first thought is a perfect thought. Sometimes we start doubting ourselves. Again, questioning mind is healthy to an extent. But then it can go into neurotic doubting when we can't make a decision, can't move in any direction. We're so stuck in our doubts, we're too neurotic to do anything. Right? So it's hard to find where is that boundary, but having in mind that some questioning is healthy, it's a sign of intelligence, but then we will never have a perfect answer. We are mere mortals. Once we think that this is wrong and I want to act against it, we engage. And another attitude of enlightened society is try to bring the best from ourselves, cultivate our own qualities, and be in sync with our good qualities, our basic goodness, and help others to bring their basic goodness, their good qualities. Having that attitude that everybody has goodness in them, and my job is to bring that out rather than push their buttons that their anger, fear, and anxiety comes out. It's your turn now.
Hey, so I have a question as far as like social action is concerned, and this is also a very hot button topic, but I was thinking about this the other night where there was this news that like Planned Parenthood would be defunded if it continued to give abortions. And for me, like, I feel like that's an extremely important issue, is my right to choose whether or not I want to have a baby. And I don't want to stay silent on that topic. And I want to try to kind of like, when I think about the other side and my family and friends who might be voting for representatives who would be taking that right away, I feel like bringing it up at all, even in a kind and respectful way, that I feel this is important and this is an example in my life, that I feel like that's almost an act of aggression, but yet I still don't want to stay silent. So what do you do?
Demonstrating your emotion is okay and sometimes good and sometimes most effective way to get your point across. Is that part of your question? How do you express yourself? Or even whether you express yourself or not?
Yeah, whether it's expressing or not. Because I know I'm not expressing in an aggressive way. But I feel like I know a lot of my family is very religious, and they feel like what I would be saying is a very evil thing to say. So do I say it? But I don't want to, you know, I don't want Planned Parenthood to be defunded. What do I do?
All right. Well, I have two things. One is a Buddhist story. The other thing, but first, let me first answer. Of course, I can't tell, because I don't know how painful this will be for you and your family to hear that you have a different opinion. And so, if you can find out a most gentle way you can express it in a way that they don't feel pain, if you have in mind their state of mind, not so much yours, but theirs, if you feel big enough and strong enough that whatever you feel, you can deal with that, that's not important. What's important is how don't you hurt them and yet express your opinion, not to pretend you are on the same page with them. If you can figure that out, go ahead. If not, there, you know, skillful means. I never use the word skillful means, but there are skillful means in every situation. Maybe it's too painful and you are not ready for it and they are not ready for it and you remain silent. That happens too. It's asking, maybe listening to yourself. Do I feel strong enough myself? And do I think they are ready enough? Am I hurting them? What's healthier? Yeah, the motivation is important. What is my motivation? Do I want to make our relationship healthier? Does it make this healthier? Am I just trying to deal with my own stuff and throw this at them and let them deal with it? These are all parts of the equation. And now the story. This is pretty short, but when you ask a very specific question, should I do this or should I do that? That reminds me the story that someday somebody comes to Buddha and says, you know, my life is unbearable. My wife keeps complaining about this and that. The house falls apart. Our goat is sick. My son disobeys. He's a teenager, and I don't know how to deal with them. My daughter, blah, 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 blah. So it goes on and on and on and on. My life is unbearable. If you can't fix it, I don't know how to live my life. And the Buddha says, you know, you came to me with your 65 problems. I can't help you with your 65 problems, but I can help you with your 66th problem, which is the desire of the first 65 to disappear. So even if we fix the 65 problems that we can formulate now, then another 65 will appear, right? That's how life goes. It's not about having a clean list. It's about having a healthy attitude of addressing one problem at a time, of what we think of a problem, what appears to be a problem.
So I understand and take your point with regard to knowledge and seeking to understand and gain perspective about issues where we don't disagree. What I've been struggling with in these types of thoughts has been there are certain things that societally we seem to just not accept. Pedophilia, white supremacy, those types of issues. So how, where do we draw that line? Where is it too far to say I will engage with you in a conversation about something that we as a society have seemingly said is not even a conversation that we're going to engage in?
I think it still depends on how strong do you feel. You know, the person, and I thought somebody will ask about white supremacy, Ku Klux Klan type of question. You see, they have a point of view which is based on some view, right? They genuinely think that that's a healthy point of view. They come from some perspective. And so I personally, even though of course I'm very angry that there are people that have that point of view, but I think that I am willing to sit down at a table with a Ku Klux Klan member. I'm really curious, how did they arrive at that perspective? And see if I can even talk to them. I'm curious. It's very unlikely I can change their point of view, but I'm curious to know what was their upbringing, what made them have that point of view. It comes from a sense of a lot of frustration and fear and territorial. They are in a lot of pain. They divided the world into us and them, and they are sitting in the prison, and there is a lot of suffering. They have a lot of suffering burning in their anger. Maybe that's an assumption, but they are worthy of trying to take care of them. Because again, it's not because they have a good point of view, because they are suffering from their point of view. I think, at least that would be the attitude with which I would approach.
One issue I would have with that is if we allow some points of view that we consider hateful to be normal, they spread, and by them spreading, they increase suffering in society. So is it our responsibility to society to minimize suffering and not let these hateful point of views become normal and allow them to be on TV or be on panels and just treat them like it's okay to have your point of view?
That's a tricky question, yes. Let me formally, if I understood you correctly, you're asking how to prevent negativity being publicized.
Spread in the spread. Society, like bullying or homophobia or racism, all that good stuff.
We try to address it, confront it the best we can, of course. How all these ways we maintain our attitude of basic goodness. All what I said can be summarized in basic goodness. I talked about four immeasurables, six parameters, but if we have that attitude that the person who is the source of bullying, Ku Klux Klan is another example, source of bullying, they do it out of their confusion, their fear, their sense of territory. They cause a lot of pain and need to be addressed, yes. Somebody who commits crime and kills people should be put in prison just to protect other people, definitely. But we need to understand that somebody who kills people, they do it out of their extreme confusion, fear, and wrong perception, wrong view, psychological unhealthiness. And so, yes, we want to address and do whatever we can, using all those skills that I talked about.
My 20-year-old daughter is at a college that it's made the news recently because a speaker was invited who some most believe has used science to justify the idea that there's genetic inequalities among us, and it became violent. Not terribly violent, but the anarchists came in and they prevented people from being able to hear him speak. And she's been very confused because on the one hand, free speech, on the other hand, not wanting to hurt people, particularly people of color, and make them feel unsafe at the campus. So I was just wishing she could have been here tonight. And this is a little aside. I was reminded, you know, this is the ideas of nonviolent protest, Gandhi and Martin Luther King as well, but that this might be very useful for her right now and her, maybe her friends. And I was wondering if you could recommend anything that I could that concisely captures all this the way you just did.
Well, we record this. This will be on podcast
after some
time.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, there we go.
So they can hear to the recording. It doesn't appear right away because they take some time to edit this, and so maybe a couple of weeks later it will appear on the website. I'm going to teach... thank you. I forgot about that. The first Wednesday of April, Wednesday night, I'm going to have Learn to Make a Difference, I think it's called. An evening, a workshop on the same subject. Usually fewer people come to that. It's more interactive and more dialogue and so forth, but it's on the calendar, Shambhala calendar, if you can come. The first Wednesday of April, I believe.
Thank you.
Learn to Make a Difference, it's called now. Yeah, there is a great quote from Gandhi. You reminded Gandhi, if we go with the approach, I'm paraphrasing, eye for an eye, the world will soon become blind.
Hi. Thanks a lot for speaking, and thanks for talking about the Enlightened Society and basic goodness. I've been reading that a lot. I think Path of the Warrior, Trungpa Rinpoche, one of the books. And I keep rereading The Enlightened Society, and I'm interested that it's actually the first chapter of that one book.
Shambhala, the Sacred Path of the Warrior. The first chapter is called Enlightened Society.
I don't know why I'm so struck that it's the first chapter. It seems like it should be at the end as I work toward it, but it's so striking for it to be first. Something that you said has been on my mind, but you use a different term, spiritual bypassing. What the term that's been coming up in my head, is, it's only my own language for me, is a couple different ones. Neutrality, spiritual neutrality, spiritual abstinence, and then occasionally flatlining. And this is what goes on for me spiritually. And I wanted you to, even if you can comment on that story that you told about the old man this could be good, this could be bad, and it's real dualistic sort of approach to life. And but I have these situations that come up. Actually, it's not even regular, just here and there, and I notice that I will bow out of the situation because I don't know what to do spiritually. So the spiritual bypassing is a great term for me to think of now. I think of it more as I abstain or I become neutral or a flat line. Mm-hmm. And there's a person that's coming up tonight, as you spoke, that who I see from time to time, who I'm always friendly with, and we're involved with the situation, and he's never really friendly to me, but one day he was very friendly to me. And I found out why. It's because he wanted something. And ever since that day, I've thought, okay, how can I deal with this person spiritually now that I know that there's some agenda that the person has? And this is just a small example. But some days I totally bow out spiritually, and other days I flatline, and then there's other days when I better keep my mouth shut. So anyway, I don't know if you have thoughts on the bypassing and even the language that I'm using, spiritual flatlining or being neutral. Those are just things I'm dealing with in my walking meditation, my mm-hmm. my loving kindness on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might not feeling ready or know how to do this, so you don't engage because you're afraid of failing. And because you don't know how to do this, it happens to me too. So I usually need some time when I hear somebody say, I usually need at least a few minutes to digest that. Some people react spontaneously. I'm a type of person who needs some time to chew on it before I find the right words, right strategy to confront the conversation, to bring a different point of view. So you might not have enough time to get ready to engage. That happens. There is, in what you described, I didn't see a problem. It's a matter of cultivating our ability, our clarity of mind, and deciding when am I ready, when I can engage productively, and when it's not going to be productive. Or I'm too fired up unreasonably, and whatever I do won't work. Sometimes, actually very often, emotion is helpful. When you show that your emotion, that this is hurting, it can make the conversation go more effectively. I had situations when people get frustrated when I'm too even, I'm too intellectually engaging, I'm not. And when I do this, now we can talk, right? When you show how you feel about this. It's the fine line before exaggerating. I kept saying pouring oil onto fire, because when it gets out of proportion, it stops being helpful. But if you feel hurt by somebody's expressing an opinion, right, about abortion, for example, right, if you show that this really hurts you and your family notices that you are not just trying to argue with them, this is something that's important to you, you are showing your vulnerability. Vulnerability is an important word. When we show our vulnerability, that makes the conversation easier. When the other side doesn't see the wall, then they see you are vulnerable and yet willing to engage, they want to work with you, usually. So maybe that can help. You may start your conversation, it doesn't feel right, I don't know, but I'm not with you, let me think about this. I don't know, maybe you can start that way. But and sometimes you're not ready for it, that's okay too. Gentleness with ourselves as well is important.
All right. So I'm going to ask you to solve a lifelong neurotic problem that I have in 3 minutes? Can you do it? So, my question, I'm here talking with you about these political issues and politics, and I've been on the left and right and center my whole life, and I can't make a decision, but I've always firmly been on one side or the other with strong convictions. And how, and so I find that as a person, as not having a strong conviction as a weakness, and yet defending a side when I really don't know all the opinions or facts on it, and defending it without having all the facts at hand, you know, just not right. But we can't ever actually have all the facts at hand, so nothing's perfect. So I wanted to be on the side and be with people and stand up with them because my gut instinct feels that way. But then again, you know, Buddhism talks about nothing is permanent, nothing's changed, to accept that. So I have, is it good that I don't have any opinions that are strong because nothing's permanent and it's fluid? Or am I just a mess?
I think I'm a lot like you in that way. It's true we don't always have all the cards. We never have. You said exactly right. We never have all the cards. Whatever view we have is a limited view. There is some level of confusion with everybody with us. So we need to have that in mind too. Whatever opinion we form, we need to realize that we are not holding all the cards. Like in that horse story, right? We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Not having strong views, I rarely have strong views. Whenever I form a view, I also tell myself, well, on the other hand, there are these other possibilities. Gut feeling, that was very important. Sometimes we have a gut feeling that this is what I should do. This is the right thing. This is what I want to say. And it's good to go with the gut feeling too very often. I'm not very good at that. Whenever I have a gut feeling, I step back and say, maybe yes, maybe no, right? We have different styles, right? And so that's okay too. I don't think you should feel smaller or... I don't think you should think of it as a problem. Spineless? What can help is not being afraid to make a mistake. Go with the gut feeling. Maybe when I see a couple of more cards, it will turn out that I was wrong, but I didn't have those cards then, so that would make sense. And that's okay. Feeling confident with who you are is where the spine is. I think there is a lot of strength and at seeing both sides of each coin. I think we need society of different people. Some people make decision right away without thinking and very confident about it. Some people have a mind that keep asking, maybe yes, there is this side, this can happen. And that makes the harmonious society. If you had board of directors, you want to have different people on that committee so collectively they can come up with the healthy decisions, right? So you provide that other part and you can feel having a good spine by having doubts. As I said, that's a sign of intelligence. It's just sometimes there is this, I think it's a biblical story or some of that. In Russian, it's called the Buridan donkey. It's a donkey, maybe there is a different name of it in English. When a donkey stands in the middle of two piles of hay and can't decide and very hungry, and looks at the both piles and both look yummy and can decide which one has more hay and which way to go and dies hungry because can't make a decision which pile is better. Right? So that's an extreme. At some point we can say, who cares? Maybe this is the wrong pile of hay, but I'm going to that way anyway. Is the story historic? No? I thought it comes from some very common Latin sources. Okay. All right, I guess it's time for us to cry on each other's shoulders there. Thank you. Thank you all.
All right. Vegan. Right on. Thanks. Hey, visit us at ny.chimbala.org for more information about classes and weekend retreats. Again, our Chimbala Training Weekend 1 is happening the weekend of May 5th. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Chimbala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. But if you are in the New York City area, come say hi. These talks are drawn from our weekly Dharma gathering, which happens every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. Just about every Tuesday night. We're skipping April 4th at 7 o'clock. You can meet these teachers live and in person, meet the other people, get to know the community, and enjoy some cheese and hummus. Email us at podcast@chimbalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, and have a great week.